Environment and Land Use, or maybe just a subcommittee. And let's open a public hearing on Senate Bill 594. I think my committee staff went to get Senator Johnson, but why don't Roy Elliker, Dave Cleary?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Shields. Appreciate the opportunity to be here this afternoon, and I'd like to first direct the committee's attention to Senate Bill 594. This is a bill, essentially, Mr. Chair, that was brought after the request of the department by Senator Betsy Johnson, and it essentially codifies in statute our existing interpretation of fishing license reciprocity, now currently utilized by the Oregon State Police and the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Game Enforcement Officers. For many years, Mr. Chair, we've had in our fishing regulations in the Columbia River regarding Oregon and Washington that fishermen from either state will be treated essentially the same as they fish on the river, all over the river, those existing licenses. In a review of some statutory authority by both Oregon and Washington that happened about just a few months ago, our council came to the conclusion that it might be best to make sure that we have in statute exact authority for this reciprocity. And that's why we asked Senator Johnson to come forward with the bill when we did. On my right is Fish Lieutenant, or from the Oregon State Police, Lieutenant for Fisheries, Dave Clary. Probably will make some comments in support as well. That's all the prepared testimony I have, sir.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Senator Ringo, Senator Shields. This is an important bill for us because of the line between the states and the Columbia, particularly on the lower river, is pretty hard for the average angler to distinguish. In our favor, we do own most of the Columbia River down around the Astoria area. As you move upstream, it becomes a little bit more definite. It's described as the main shipping channel. But as Deputy Elliker explained, it has been for many years the interpretation that as long as they had a valid Washington and Oregon license, when they were on the water, didn't matter where they fished, they were legitimate. This does clarify one thing: when there are some minor differences in our regulations, such as bag limits, that those people from Washington wishing to take out and land in Oregon would still have to follow our bag limits. We're currently in a system right now where we have a differing bag limits between Washington and Oregon on the Columbia River in regards to steelhead. So,
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Senator Shields.
Are you saying that bag limits are higher on the Washington side and they can't carry those out on the Oregon side if they're loading on the Oregon side? They have to stick with the Oregon bag limits? Or is it the other way around?
Senator Shields, currently their bag limit is higher. They allow an extra two fish in the right combination. Our standpoint has been that if they're landing in Oregon, they have to stay at the two fish versus the four that Washington allows. And that's caused some confusion because those anglers are looking at their regs, and we try to keep those as consistent as possible.
Okay.
The clarification you're making, and this is in the bill lines 7 and 8, says, or in the waters of the Columbia River where it forms the Oregon-Washington boundary. So in your mind, this pushes the applicability of the existing law further upriver? Is that what that does? I mean, essentially, Roy, you said you were trying to address some ambiguities, and I'm trying to understand exactly what those are and how you do that.
Senator Ringo, there's two issues I think that this relates to. Is we have a separate statute that deals with fishing in the ocean and reciprocity. This makes it clear once you move into the river that, you know, reciprocity would occur.
Up
and
the river.
Also, yes, all the way up, as long as it's a border between the two states. And it also adds the shellfish, which is a new addition since the license went into effect last year.
Okay. How's it work if the in Oregon we now have a fee for crabbing? How does that work? If you're landing in Oregon, you need the fee. If you're landing in Washington, then it depends what their rule is.
Currently, Washington has a shellfish license for certain species. If you were to go crabbing in the Columbia and land in Oregon, the only license that's valid is the Oregon license.
I see.
And technically, if those people come across the line, they would need an Oregon license even to fish in Oregon, and this would rectify and make that a reciprocity.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks very much. Phil Donovan and Dennis Ritchie.
Which one are you on, Tom?
594.
I think so.
Hopefully.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Phil Donovan. I'm here on behalf of the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association. And just very briefly, wanted to say that this is a bill where we thought this was already existing law. And as the law enforcement pointed out beforehand, we really don't want to have a confusion of anglers trying to figure out where the lines are as they move. Throughout the Columbia River system, situation reciprocity seems to make the most sense. There's bi-state management of the Columbia, where the respective fish and game departments work together with citizen input, and we think this is a good bill and should pass.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Ringo, senators, my name is Dennis Ritchie. I'm executive director of Oregon Anglers. We represent individual fishermen and small fishing clubs, and we have a little over 3,000 members now. We feel strongly that this also should pass at 11 o'clock today. I was just west of Rainier on Dibley Beach talking to anglers about this specifically, and there were probably about one-third of the vehicles with Washington licenses fishing in the Columbia off Oregon beaches, and the same thing happens on the Washington side, except I really think that we have a larger proportion of Oregon fishermen often on the Washington side, because there are just more Oregonians along the Columbia than there are Washingtonians. That's rapidly changing, but I feel that this would, if we didn't formalize this, it would be a nightmare.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're here to avoid nightmares. Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. Any questions from the committee? Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, is there more testimony on this?
No.
I know that staff went to get Senator Johnson, but we don't necessarily need Senator Johnson here if we're in favor of this bill.
I am in favor of the bill. I believe you are. I believe he is. So
yeah,
let's do it without Senator Johnson.
Yeah, we'll inform her of our decision if she ever gets here.
Right. Maybe she'll talk us out of it.
Yeah.
So let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 594. Open a work session on Senate Bill 594. Senator Shields, do you have a motion?
Yes, I'd move Senate Bill 594 to move forward with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Shields has moved Senate Bill 594 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? So ordered. Senator Shields, you want to carry that bill?
Sure, why not? Well, it's Johnson's bill. Shouldn't I let Senator Johnson carry it?
Let Senator Johnson do it. That's fine. And let's open up a work session on Senate Bill 694. And
want to move it, or you want to hold a public hearing first?
Let's hold a public hearing first. Thank you. Let's open a public hearing on Senate Bill 694. And begin with
Mr. Chair.
Roy Elliker. Yes.
It's bill is my bill. I'll speak on behalf of it.
Go ahead.
As the department's coming forward, I think anybody else, but this bill very simply allows the department to issue tags for terminally ill children, much like the Make-A-Wish Foundation. We've had those requests, not necessarily in Oregon before, but in other states, where children who have wanted to go on a certain kind of hunt or something like that. And I don't know that the department is precluded from doing it now. They'll speak to that, but this expressly allows it.
Okay. Thank you.
Again, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Roy Elliker, Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And I write Mr. Ron Anglin, the Wildlife Division Administrator. Essentially, you'll see from our short testimony, Mr. Chair, that we generally support the concept of this bill. It allows us to have the commission adopt by rules, some rules that allow us to clarify the application process for these tags, which we would need. But essentially, we don't have a problem with the bill, and it's a good cause. We have worked with groups before this bill through the landowner preference programs, I understand it, to help make some tags available at that time. But this would be more specific to working with these groups and making tags available for this purpose.
Thank you. Mr. Englund?
For the record, Ron Englund, Wildlife Division Administrator for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I have nothing further to add at this time.
Okay. Thank you. Anything from the committee?
All right. Thank you. Is it Benson Elkins? Is there somebody else with you here? I've got... All right. Just trying to read the writing here.
That's fine. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Al Elkins with the Oregon Hunters Association. I'd like to thank Senator Beyer and Senator Farioli for bringing this bill forward. In January, at our board meeting in Redmond, Mr. Benson, to my right, came from Klamath Falls to talk to us about this concept and would we support it. We said wholeheartedly we would. Mr. Benson's the head of the Hunt for a Lifetime program. I'd like to talk a little bit about that program today. And Mr. Peabody has had a child that's been involved in the program as well. Okay. So turn it over to them.
Thank you for coming, Mr. Benson.
Thank you. For the record, my name's Danny Benson. I'm from Klamath Falls, Oregon, and I'm the ambassador for Oregon for Hunt of a Lifetime. The program was founded in late 1999. Basically granting wishes of children and young adults up to 21 years of age that have been diagnosed with a life-threatening illness. Here in Oregon, we've been operating the local chapter in Oregon since 2002, and we've been able to accommodate some of the kids through the program with the landowner preference tag system. Last year was an example of why we seek this Senate bill being passed, as we had a young person come over for his dream hunt of a mule deer hunt. The evening before the season opened, he showed up. We went out the next morning. He was still currently under treatment for his cancer that he was being treated for, excuse me, and began running a temperature. Being 100 miles or so away from the nearest hospital, his father elected that the hunt could not go on. We were limited at that time to a short season. And that's part of the reason for this Senate bill in itself, is that we would be able to not only have multiple areas to take the kids to truly offer them a dream hunt, but we'd also have a longer duration in the event that a young person got sick during the standard season. We could set that hunt off to a further date through the 90-day season that would be allowed through this bill. I've submitted some written testimony of my own and some information about Hunt of a Lifetime and the program in itself. And at this time, that concludes my testimony. If there's any questions that I could answer.
No. Thank you very much. Mr. Peabody?
Yeah, for the record, I'm Rick Peabody. I currently live in Tigard, Oregon. Senator Ringo and Senators, and thank you, Senator Beyer, for your time. I appreciate it today. I don't know if you gentlemen have children of your own. I don't know if you've experienced cancer and what that can do, especially to the young people who are maybe not as mentally mature as we are. In my son's situation, The cancer was extremely aggressive. It required that when he be hospitalized immediately. He spent 6 months in the hospital, three of them in the intensive care unit. And I included some pictures here just so that you would know who I'm talking about. There was a time where I would call that his lowest point, where we were, as parents, holding on, trying to find things that would give him some motivation to continue the fight that he was doing. And it was about that time that we found out about the program Hunt of a Lifetime. And he and I spent many evenings talking about what we would do when he got out of the hospital. And I believe that it was things like this that gave him the inner strength to continue to fight the fight that he did. The generous time and the efforts that were put forth by Hunt of a Lifetime was extremely helpful in our case. We had a wonderful opportunity to go. Unfortunately, his health held while we were able to complete the hunt, and we have wonderful memories of father and son participating in an American Heritage. So by this bill passing and enabling these young men who are so vulnerable to, because their immune system is compromised, they're so vulnerable to any type of sickness, it is very pertinent that they leave the field, which is full of bacteria and so forth. Extending that time would enable them to fulfill that dream with their parents. So I appreciate you listening and taking this into consideration.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your courage in giving your testimony, and certainly sympathies from me and from the committee here. Any questions from the committee? No. Thank you very much for testifying. Yeah, Jared Broadfoot.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jared Broadfoot, testifying today on behalf of the Oregon chapters of Safari Club International. In support of Senate Bill 694, just briefly, we think Senate Bill 694 is a wonderful piece of legislation that will give terminally ill children the ability to fulfill their hunt of a lifetime. As one of the leading conservation organizations in the United States, we're very proud to participate and help as much as we can in this program, and want to make sure that this legislation gets through and that the department's able to carry this program out.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, let's go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 694. Senator Shields, are you game?
Yes.
Let's open a work session on Senate Bill 694.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 694 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Byers moves Senate Bill 694 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection?
No.
So ordered. So, thank you.
Good bill.
Yeah. So we'll get the bill out of the Senate next week. Maybe this week. And let's go ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 805. Roy Elliker, Patty Burke.
If I could have a second, I've got a number of bills up there. I can't put my finger on the copy of the testimony for 805.
Well, you know what? I'm happy to go on to another bill if you'd like.
What's that?
You want to move on to a different bill?
And
sure. Okay,
yeah.
I'm going to make a quick note here.
You got it? Yeah, sure.
Okay.
There you go.
Excuse me one second. Do we know if Senator George will be here on this?
I believe he will be coming.
Okay. Have we asked him?
Yeah, I just came.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sure. Again, good afternoon, members of the committee. Chair Ringo, my name is Roy Elker, for the record. Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife on my right. Ms. Patty Burke, our Marine Program Manager out of Newport. And directing testimony here that we've just put in front of you, directed on Senate Bill 805. Mr. Chair, we understand that the bill's intent is to provide meaningful notice of future fishery closures. And we've been working very hard with constituents on this issue, particularly in the ground fish sport fishery, since we had the unfortunate closing in 2004, just prior to Labor Day, of our recreational ground fishery, a very important one for the coast. And I think most of the members of the committee are familiar, in fact, with the circumstances of that. But this bill directs us in a real-time way to keep daily track of probably over 100 species that are managed through 8 federal fisheries councils. A real huge chore for the department that, it, of course, if you take a look at the fiscal, Mr. Chair, you'll see it's quite a fiscal because of the nature of the task that's being required by this bill. Essentially, though, it's a very broad bill. It asks us to keep daily track of fairly managed species. There's a couple issues that we have with this. First of all, since most of the other states, or none of the other states at this point in the West Coast, or even on the East Coast I'm aware of, keep daily track of federally managed fisheries, this probably would put Oregon at a disadvantage since the other states go with a monthly tracking or even a bi-monthly tracking system, which means we'd have that much more accurate data and probably result in that much that more concise closure of a fishery rather than an extension. Second of all, as I've mentioned, the bill includes all commercial and recreationally caught species managed under federal fishery council. There are currently 8 federal councils that cover the United States fishing industry. And if you add up all the species that Oregon has participating in through these 8 federal councils, there's probably over 100 different species off the West Coast that this bill would mean that ODFW in Oregon would be essentially trying to track on a daily basis. Third, because a number of these fishery species are not managed on a state jurisdiction, but more on either West Coast or bi-state jurisdiction, it'd be very difficult for a number of these fish to do that. Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask Patty Burke to then talk about specifically the 3 major systems we use now to track this fishery and some new systems we've put in place as a result of our rockfish closure in 2004.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Just to expand on what we have as a capacity today, for sport fisheries, we really have to estimate the catch. We can't count every fish that's landed. For commercial, we actually can count. There's a tax on each pound of fish landed. Therefore, we've got data on commercial fisheries, but even receiving those fish tickets takes about a month for the fish ticket information to go to the processor, get registered, and then come back to the Salem office and then back to the Newport office. The sport fishery is where we have our biggest challenge in having a timely way of reporting landings because, as I said, they're estimated. We have about 50 staff up and down the coast that are summer employees that collect this data, and they can only sample a certain number of landings, and some of you that have fished in the ocean have probably had that happen. So these estimates come in, we then have to fact check the estimates. The staff are in the field writing down the information or entering it into a handheld computer. They then download it to us. We have to fact check it, look for errors, and then go through the process of moving from number of fish to estimating pounds of fish and then looking at the different species. So it is something that is a large staff load to try to get done what we get done now on a monthly basis. As Roy said, it's important for the state of Oregon to have a consistent system with the other states. If one state reported more frequently or less frequently, it would be much harder for the federal agency to coordinate our policies on harvest caps and on the policy behind opening and closing fisheries. What the department has done since the experience of this closure, which is the first time we've had this situation in the ocean rockfish fishery, was to enhance a group of advisors we already had with more people representing ports, sport fishing organizations, charter organizations, and ask for their advice on how we could do this differently. The advisory committee's been very active and interacting with us almost on a daily basis, not only with meetings but through emails. And we designed a new web page, which I'll hand out as a example of what we've put together that does basically what I believe the intent of this bill is, which is to try to give the public a way to track our data as it's coming in so that they're able to figure out where that fishery is and understand that they may be approaching a cap or we may be ahead of ourselves and not have a problem. One of the biggest issues we had last year was that the tourism end of things was caught unaware. We have salmon openings and closings with a 48-hour notice. We had never had this with groundfish before. And this should give us a similar system to salmon where we can show people what the tracking was last year by species. And then as we get our data in, enter it in, and they can compare where are we this year on black rockfish or canary rockfish as opposed to last year. And it also shows what the cap is so people can see what we're managing to. And that's one of, I believe, the biggest intents of this bill is to try to give the public an awareness of where we're at in a timely way so that they can sort of go through the process with the department as we try to track this. The Sport Fish Advisory Committee gave us most of the advice on how to design that website. They've also worked with us to put forward some proposals to our commission. The ODF, the Fish and Wildlife Commission, took some drastic action last fall to try to prevent closures in the future. We lowered the bag limit. Roy's giving you the list of the sport fish advisors, many of whom you've worked with here at the Capitol. The commission was able to work with the advisory committee and they in turn worked with the people along the coast and the people that are affected by this fishery to come to an agreement on lowering the daily bag limit for rockfish from 10 fish to 8 fish. And that should slow down the fishery somewhat, assuming similar weather, similar fishing behavior as last year, which is always some risk. In addition, the commission directed us to close fisheries with a 48-hour notice, as we do with salmon, and also to work with the advisory committee and have a specific meeting in early July, late June, to review all the data we've gotten to date so that we can, with them, kind of come to a conclusion as to whether we're ahead of ourselves, we're behind last year, and take action to either further reduce the bag limit or make some management changes that would allow the fishery to continue but be able to manage it under the harvest caps that are set by the federal government. So we've done a lot of work to try to prevent what happened last year, to try to provide the public with a lot more information. And we have had a lot of cooperation, especially from the angling and charter groups and the ports, offering to volunteer to do educational materials to help communicate information as we get it out to them. And so we think we're going to have a lot more of a partnership approach to this starting this year.
Thank you. How much notice did you give to the closure of the fishery?
We had, Mr. Chair, we had found out that we had a problem on Friday before Labor Day, which was the following weekend, and we thought that we would see what the weather was that weekend before we knew when we'd have to close it. If it was a bad weather week, we might have made it through Labor Day, so we didn't want to announce on Friday that we were closing if we weren't going to close. And so we had to do it Monday after we met with some advisors up and down the coast, and we saw the data from the weekend. We manually brought it in.
So that was the Monday before Labor Day weekend.
Right. So people had about 4 days' notice on that.
I see. And what information did you receive that gave you such cause to do something dramatic?
Mr. Chair, the tracking data that we get, as I say, we have kind of a one-month lag, and so we are trying to look at the data that we had received the month before as soon as we could on three different species that have three different harvest caps, mm-hmm. and it turned out that black rockfish in the last month had exceeded the harvest that it had in any records that we had, and also it exceeded what we were modeling to. And that's because there had been a change in federal regulations to move the fishery closer to shore, which will target that species more frequently. We weren't able to model what kind of effect that would have until we lived through a season.
This bill says that there should be daily tracking, and so you come up with you say you're going to need 32 FTE to do that, $3.5 million, $3.8 million. What if you did the tracking, say, once a week or twice a month?
Well, the tracking that we're doing now is basically we're getting people to do the estimates on shore. The question is, how can you get the data from the shore, fact check it and improve it in time to get it back into the system and be able to calculate what the estimates are? So there's at least a 2 week lag anyway, and then that would require more people. If you wanted to get that system to work faster, you'd probably want some different models. The models that we've got need improvement, frankly. We've got a much more complex regulatory framework than we did even 2 years ago. And so there are a lot of parts of the system that need to be fixed if we were to try to do this on an accelerated basis. Again, the counterpoint to that would be that if Oregon is reporting more frequently than the other states around us, we're more likely to know sooner that we have a problem, while California and Washington can sit back for a week or two more and wait and say, okay, now we have a problem. So that's kind of an uncomfortable reality to this situation, and I think all three states are trying to improve their systems so that we can get better tracking on a uniform basis.
Yeah, I understand that, but I guess my question is, you did a fiscal based on having to do tracking every day.
Yes, sir. That's right,
and
Mr. Chair.
And let's say there's 20 work days a week. So what if he had to do tracking instead of once a month, just twice a month? What kind of fiscal? Any guess?
Well,
go ahead.
Mr. Chair, the tracking, the people are out there every day, 7 days
right,
a week.
They're not reporting it. They're not.
They're reporting it when they do. And what this does is it would provide you with more people to process that data, basically. And so whether you do it on a biweekly basis or a daily basis, you know, there's probably a logarithmic increase in what you need. But it would be less than that to do it more frequently. It's basically a human workload issue as opposed to a technology issue.
Yeah. Okay. Well, committee? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Senator George. How's your foot doing, Senator?
It's doing great. Thank you very much.
Good.
Better than my attitude is right now. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is State Senator Gary George, representing District 12. My former district included the bulk of the Central Oregon coast, now represented by Senator Verger, who was also a signer on this bill. Obviously, we had a problem, and the problem is that right in the middle of a major tourist activity, sport fishing season, commercial fishing, we had a notice dropped on us. And so what happened here, Mr. Johnston and other folks on the coast decided that there needed to be a more orderly plan to really establish when, in fact, we were coming up on the numbers in which closure might need to occur. So this bill is an attempt to do that. Now, when I was back in my office and I realized that there was nobody here to testify, but in fact we were being rained on by the Department of Fish and Wildlife, who, by the way, never notified my office of any problem with the bill or any other fiscal fiscal activity. I'm a little bit shocked with that, to tell you the truth. It's nothing new in this building, and I wish there was a disciplinary process for that kind of activity. But I'm very satisfied that there are, in fact, certain actions being taken on their part to address the concerns. Because when they make a decision, as you just heard a few minutes ago, without really solid information, these are models. And I served on the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission, and I know that those models many times were based on faulty data. If, in fact, you're having a very healthy harvest of a certain unit of the fishery, and you come to the conclusion that you may need to shut it down, maybe you need to reevaluate how many fish are out there, because that may be the issue. But what is being asked for in this bill by the folks on the coast was, give us a chance to at least adapt to what the impending numbers will be. In other words, a lot of money was lost down there. These are communities that are suffering greatly because of the management or mismanagement of the oceans at this time. I hope I can answer any questions. I wish these people were here. We notified them, and they're not here to defend the bill. Like I say, my concern is that we come in with a fiscal without even suggesting, as you did, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that very greatly. Can you adjust the numbers a little bit to accomplish the goal of these people? And with that, I will just be quiet, because I'm getting angrier instead of quiet.
I appreciate that, Senator George. Maybe I just was not understanding what the department testified, but under their fiscal analysis, it says, under the bill, ODF&W assumes that fish tickets would have to be submitted daily and also input into the tracking and reporting system on a daily basis. And it just seems to me there's got to be some middle ground between daily and information produced once a month.
Absolutely. And I'm curious as to whether or not they've, in fact, they mentioned that they had been working with certain interests on the coast to come up with a method that would maybe be more productive than what they have done in the past. But the question is, why wouldn't that be something that you could do? I mean, you're shooting for a target number, and if you had reporters on the docks that were saying, we have this kind of catch today, and you were tracking that, I can't see. I mean, they could file this over the Internet. As to what their catch was for the day as we get closer and closer to the cutoff dates. My hope is that the committee will at least get something secured from them indicating that they're going to deal a little bit more understanding with the economic consequences to the coastal community.
We'll see what we can do.
Thank you very much.
Questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Dennis Ritchie, Tony Meeker.
Go ahead. Senator Ringo, Senators, my name is Dennis Ritchie. West Lynn is actually the Office of Oregon Anglers, but we have people all up and down the coast that we represent. I am one of the Sports Fishing Advisory Committee members. Matter of fact, I'm probably the only one on the Sports Fishing Advisory Committee that doesn't have a boat that can go out in the ocean. So I bum rides with a lot of these people. The idea of this bill was the very first thing that was explored by the Sports Fishing Advisory Committee, looking at ways that we could get around the personnel issues and the time issues, and we thought the Internet is something that we could just instantly plug into. Part of the problems are that we're dealing with a federal bureaucracy that sets quotas and sets reporting techniques and that sort of things that I don't understand, that I'm sure Dr. Burke does. But I feel that the way this bill is, it's absolutely impossible and for sure fiscally impossible to institute. I was quite surprised by Senator George's testimony, because if this was one of his bills, I would have thought that he would have looked at a fiscal impact before he submitted his name to it. The bottom line is, we would love to have that kind of reporting. I physically don't think it's possible. Dr. Burke has done everything humanly possible to go around and explain to the people in all the different cities as to how this perfect storm came about, that everything at once took the rug out from under ODFW's feet, and they had to come up with this closure. They don't set the caps. They have no choice. They tried to play the odds, and probably, looking back on it, they should have closed it even a week earlier. And
but how could they have if they didn't have the information until then?
Well, the information that they had indicated that they were very close to the cap, and the catch rate was phenomenal. Now, because I'm on the Sports Fishing Advisory Committee, and I had not gone out on a charter boat for like 25 years, and we're dealing with a lot of the charter boat fishermen also, that Sunday, the day before the closure, I took my son-in-law out fishing on the Blitz out of Newport. And it's absolutely amazing how the charter boats and the electronics that we have on today's sports boats too go from one point to one another point to another point, exactly where all the pinnacles are, where the rockfish gather around. They can look down on their fish finders with the depth. They can say, okay, the fish are down there 25 feet, let it out 17 pulls, we'll catch 10 or 12 fish here, and then we'll move on. They're catching fish at a phenomenal rate, and the weather really was forecast to be lousy, so they tried to extend it, they tried to milk it out, and it didn't work.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Meeker.
Senator Ringo, members of the committee, my name is Tony Meeker. I'm the president of the Oregon Anglers, and here to give you my thoughts both as a president of the organization and as a sport fisherman as well. I can appreciate the spirit of the bill and support the notion that the more data we have, the better off we're going to be from the standpoint of meeting our required needs in federal fisheries and the quotas that are limited or based are put on us. So with that in mind, I look at the fiscal statement and I say, well, you know, I like the notion of this concept, but I'm certain that I don't want to spend $3.5 million or $1 million on this kind of thing when we are in such desperate need of funds being expended in other areas. For example, one of the problems with the rock fishery on the Pacific coast is we don't have enough research data on it. It's the people, when the salmon began to dwindle, the fishery moved to other fish. And you can see the pressure mounting on the nearshore fishery. We simply don't have enough information about it. So if I were to make some choices on where money was to be spent, it wouldn't be here. It would be on understanding exactly how the quotas are to be developed first. Just in the spirit of attempting to see the right way to spend our money, I don't believe it is. The other thing that I would say is that during the years that I spent time in this building, you would see a referral to the Ways and Means Committee on a bill that had a fiscal impact of this nature. I'm not sure that it does, but if it doesn't have one, it certainly should. Because the Ways and Means Committee, as you know, juggling everything down there, would be surprised by a $3.5 million expenditure on this bill.
You know, I don't think you need to tell us the procedures.
Well, I apologize to you immediately, Senator Ringo. I was not suggesting to you that I was criticizing the procedures.
Okay. If there's a fiscal, we'll deal with it.
Great.
Okay.
So if you can find the money for it, that'd be great, too.
Okay. Thank you. We'll go after Senator Meyer. Okay. Thank you very much. I was wondering if Roy and Ms. Burke, if you could come back up just for a second, please.
First of all, Mr. Chair, I would like to go on the record, apologize, Senator George, for not coming by his office.
Okay.
I appreciate the opportunity to do that, Senator. We have spent quite a bit of time with Ed Johnston, whose bill this at the request of, and I met with Ed a few weeks, about a month ago. We went through his bills. I told him we would be talking to him about his bills. I said they'd be probably pretty costly to implement, but we, Ed and I have been talking for months and months since the 2004 dialogue, so I felt a little bit comfortable, Senator, that at least I had talked to Ed and he knew where our position was. I was out of town for that Cougar hearing in Baker City, Sardinia last week, and then at Canyonville Saturday, so again, I apologize on the record. We should have come by Senator George's office.
Well, I appreciate that, and you know, I'm not sure I understand all aspects of this, but it seems to me that you're collecting this data virtually every day, and then at the end of the month, you tally it up and report it, and it's posted and made available to the public. Is that okay. Am I close to right?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yes, close to right. It's kind of a continuous flow.
Okay.
It's coming in daily, but, for example, the commercial, they have to mail it in to Salem within 2 weeks of receiving it. So it could come two days earlier. Yeah. And it's a range of responses.
But wouldn't it be possible to post it to the public, the data that you have, and sure, it's inexact and you're working with models, but just post it sooner. Post it quicker to the time you receive it.
Mr. Chair, I think the issue is, do you want to post material that you're not certain of its accuracy? And that's okay. What we're really spending most of our time here fact-checking it and comparing it, and then you have to convert weights from number of fish to weight.
Well, do you see a way to address the problem that Senator George is raising without hanging a $3.5 million fiscal on it?
Well,
I mean, and you mentioned some of them, and I appreciate that. You're taking some efforts, but in terms of requiring the quicker reporting and posting of the data such that it's not going to be that much more expensive.
Well, Mr. Chair, what we're doing now is, you know, rather than counting every fish of every species, there are some species that aren't caught that frequently, and there are some species that are going to be under harvest caps. So that's one way, if you were to mandate a more frequent reporting of fewer species.
Okay.
Another thing we have been doing, really, this is a federally mandated monitoring program, and we're trying to tweak our program, like I said, with handhelds to get it as fast as we can.
Okay.
That's Oregon's unique in that way. We have got the only state that is not doing paper records on the shore.
So we're already...
We're trying to maximize it. And also, I've been working with our congressional delegation to enhance the funding that we get through the Federal Pacific States Marine Fishery Commission to pay for better tracking and monitoring. Really, this is something where we should be pushing the federal government to give us additional revenues. And Oregon, of the three states on the coast, gets the lowest number of dollars from the commission, and we're trying to change that as well. So we're working on this on a number of fronts.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that, Senator Byer. Anything? Okay. Well, I just encourage you to work with Senator George or Ed Johnson if there's a way to kind of narrow the scope of this, but I appreciate your efforts in that regard.
Well, Mr. Chair, we'll go ahead and we'll work with Senator George closely, see if we can't do something better than what we already have planned.
Okay.
And we have been working closely with Ed Johnston. If Ed was here, he'd probably be able to tell you that.
Okay.
Thanks, Senator.
Thank you very much. So let's go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 805. I did want to announce Senate Bill 389. Jared Broadfoot told me that you guys are working on amendments. The amendments aren't ready.
We've got one set.
Have you seen the amendments? Have you had a chance to look at them? They're not quite there. You mean LC didn't do them perfectly? Okay. So we won't be having a hearing today on Senate Bill 389. I'm sorry for those of you that have been waiting, but we'll move on to some of the other issues that we're going to want to address today. So let's open a public hearing on Senate Bill 346. Roy Elliker, John Thorpe.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Roy Elliker, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. On my right, Mr. John Thorpe, our Program Manager for Hatchery Propagation. We've testified before, Mr. Chair, on Senate Bill 346, and we are neutral as to the main issue of whether or not this becomes a permitted or remains a conditional land use. The department just was asking for an amendment to clarify, and I guess that's in front of you in the dash 2 amendment, which would insert aquatic species back in the place where it originally is in the law. And the department supports that amendment. We think it once again clarifies that any fish species that are raised are subject to commission authority. And with that amendment, sir, we have no other issues with the bill. If we could have that passed.
Can you point to me to the dash 2 amendments where that clarification is?
Yes, sir. Right on page 1 of the dash 2 amendments where it states lines 4 through 6 where it essentially refers back to the original bill and goes back to the original bill and goes to page 2, and there in the writing aquatic species was in a sense lifted out and made a separate subheading from bird and animal species to the extent allowed by rules adopted by State Fish and Wildlife Commission. This amendment would put the aquatic species back in the same line with the bird and animal species.
All right. And you're still giving us a fiscal $33,000?
Senator Ringo, Senator Beyer, I'm not aware of a fiscal that we submitted for this bill. I don't believe there being a fiscal for us from the Department of Fish and Wildlife.
It's DLCD.
DLCD, yeah.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Beyer.
Can I ask Roy to comment on the dash 1 amendments? Which is virtually a gutting stuff of the bill. Well, not a gutting stuff, I guess. Just and it changes it gutses the bill, deletes the bill, and just adds aquatic species as a permitted use under definition of farm use.
Should I address that?
Sure. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, if you're looking at the dash 1 amendments dated February 3rd, if I have the correct copy there, sir, down there on the first page, it does lift aquatic species out of the litany of the extent rules laid out by State Fish and Wildlife Commission and adds them afterwards. And looking at the dash 1s, we still have an issue with just that. We want the aquatic species back in place with the bird and animal species. When we had our lawyers review this bill in particular and the way the aquatic species was being described, to our knowledge, where aquatic species was placed in the bill had little to do with whether or not they became a permitted use or remained a conditional use. And it may inadvertently set up a conflict in law between our statutes regarding State Fish and Wildlife Commission jurisdiction over aquaculture and not. And so it was that reason that we wanted the language to revert back to what the law says now, to leave aquatic species in as part of the others. Chair Ringo, Senator Byers, does that answer your question?
Sort of.
Me too.
Do you have anything to add, Mr. Thor?
No, sir.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Let's hear from a couple other folks on this bill then. Clint Bentz and Ann Nystrom. Joe? Oh, sure. Joe, we'd love to have you.
And Rystrom here also.
Right. Maybe can you just start with explaining what are the dash ones? And
yes. I'll start maybe, and then Joe can finish off. I'm Clint Bentz.
I'm
president of the Oregon Aquaculture Association. Senator Ringo, Senator Beyer. When Senate Bill 346 was originally drafted, we went to legislative council and said we want something very simple. We want just to make sure that aquaculture is a definition in the EFU zone. When legislative council originally submitted this bill, they decided they wanted to do a cleanup of this EFU statute And when we shopped it around to the different agencies, a lot of the new language was problematic to people. And so rather than fight that battle, we went back and asked them to do it again. And that's where we came up with the Dash 1 amendment, which basically took out, basically restored the law to its existing form, but moved the word aquatic species from where it was to the end, in the middle of the sentence, to the end of the sentence. I'd like maybe Joe to explain his discussions with legislative council about why that was done.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Joe Rollator. I'm the lobbyist for the Oregon Aquaculture Association. As I worked my way through this bill with legislative council, we had the draft one, the Dash 1 language drafted specifically to exclude all that language on that new language on page 2 and 3 of the printed bill. And the Dash 2 amendments leave that language, that new language in the printed bill, in the amended bill. And so you'd have a situation where you're redefining farm use. Through my discussions with various folks like the tree farmers, the Department of Agriculture, and the DLCD, it was real clear to me that that's not our original intention and that we didn't want that new language in there. All we wanted to do was make it very clear that aquatic species are use in an exclusive farm use. And I also talked to legislative council after ODF&W mentioned that they thought somehow moving aquatic species took them out of the loop, and that's not our intention. It's not what legislative council told me that change does. But that if ODF&W has jurisdiction, then they still have jurisdiction, no matter whether it's an allowed farm use or whether it's conditional farm use. If ODF&W doesn't have the authority over a species, the way the original exclusive farm use bill was written, we wouldn't be able to use it in exclusive farm use, because ODF&W clearly has authority to represent, to regulate animals and plants. And that fish are animals, but there are some fish that they don't regulate. There are some plants that they don't regulate. So if one of our clients, as our industry expands, wanted to grow something that wasn't in there, that was an aquatic species, and aquatic species are plants are very valuable now, Senator. We think it could be a real growth place for our industry. So we try to not have this conditional use problem come up in the future for our growing industry. So that's why I had it drafted that way. I really think that the Dash 2 amendments should not be passed, because they bring back in language that's way too complicated. It was not our intention to redefine farm use to that extent. Thank you.
So you want the Dash 1 amendments passed?
Yes, Senator.
Well, if we're redefining farm use, maybe we'll do that in the Measure 37 bill.
Yeah.
So
maybe that gets some fodder for you, Senator Ringo.
Yeah. That's nice, John.
Senator Ringo and other senators, we've had some trouble in Clackamas County getting permits to move portable fish tanks around and things like that. It's kind of the equivalent of having to get a permit every time you move your fence for your cow. And it's been a great inconvenience. We feel that Fish and Wildlife maintains their control over the regulation through propagation licenses, and that this shouldn't impede them. And recommend the bill.
Okay. Thank you very much,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Byrne?
Could I ask the committee's administrator a question about the fiscal? Maybe he can't answer it, but I think the fiscal we have is dealing with the original bill, not with either of the amendments. Is that correct?
That is correct.
It's my opinion that if we were to adopt the Dash 1 amendments, the fiscal would go away, because that would eliminate the need for the LCDC or DLCD to rewrite and look at the the rewrite of what is the farm use statutes and rules.
Yeah, that was my impression, although legislative fiscal hasn't confirmed that. So.
Chair? Well, I'm not going to move this today. I just want to tell you that I need to let my brain sift on this a little bit longer, and maybe we can chat after the hearing. I just need to digest what you said, and I'd like to put on the record that we'll carry this over till tomorrow.
Thank you.
Don't get up at 7 o'clock tomorrow, though, to come in, but I'd like to talk to you, Joe, afterwards, just to kind of mull it over a little bit. Is there any other questions from the committee? Okay. Thank you very much. Let's close the public hearing then on Senate Bill 346. And open a public hearing on Senate Bill 351. Well, why don't we do the Clint Vents and Nystrom. Joe, do you want to come up on this one too? Thank you.
Senator Ringo, committee. We're here to talk about Senate Bill 351. We've testified on this bill previously. There are five amendments before the committee today, some of which we have proposed, some of which have been proposed by Department of Fish and Wildlife. As you know, the Senate Bill 351 has three sections. The first section relates to sturgeon propagation. Second section relates to transportation permits. The third section relates to setting up a private fish hatchery advisory committee. The first section on the sturgeon, we have an amendment that we'd like to propose. It's Amendment -5, the -5 amendment. One of the concerns on this was that we do have three hatcheries that at this point do have a grandfathered permit, and we wanted to not have this bill impact in any way the rights that they currently have or with their grandfathered clause. So okay. The -5 amendment adds a new section that basically just says that they would continue to be able to have their permit under the conditions before the implementation of this act. On section 2, which is the transportation permit part, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has assured us, number one, that they have the regulatory authority already to do the things that we've asked them to do. And then, in fact, they would exercise that authority to make the changes that we were asking for, and that we don't need Section 2 to do that. And so on the -4 amendment deletes Section 2. And so we are...
And you're fine with that?
We're fine. So the -4 and the -5 amendments have our support.
Okay.
The third section is on the private the hatchery advisory committee. The department testified at the last hearing that they were going to do the advisory committee, whether or not we had enabling legislation for it. That was something they wanted to do, and we applaud that sentiment. We think it's a good thing for both the industry and the department to do this. But it was our feeling that we, you know, just the definitions, the things that we have in there, we'd like to see the that section remain in the bill, and so for that reason, we're opposing the -2 amendment, which deleted Section 3. The -1 amendment is the same as the -4 amendment, so.
which we're opposing dash 2. The dash 3 amendment we had at our last time.
I'm just scribbling notes. The dash 1 is the same as the dash
2. I believe the dash 1 is basically identical to the dash 5, the dash 4 amendment.
Okay.
So.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's. So we're with there. The dash 3 amendment that's in front of you, we had the large discussion was regarding the fiscal impact of this bill on the department. The department and our association is in agreement that the department needs resources to do many things, including manage and regulate our industry. And that probably that they are under-resourced to be able to do that, even the current tasks that they have for us. As a good faith effort on our part, we put the dash 3 amendment on the table and went over to the department. This, according to our best guess, got us up within about 90% of the fiscal impact on this bill. It was a fairly simple way to raise funds. There's an annual fee. We already have an annual reporting that we do with the department, and so just basically adding a sales tax basically to our product. After a discussion with the department, they basically felt like. This still wasn't enough money. They weren't really interested in doing this, and so we're pulling the dash 3 amendment back. We'd like to hold it maybe when we get down in front of Ways and Means with this bill. It's still something we're still talking with the department, trying to figure out a way maybe to do this. Again, we want to be part of the solution, not part of the problem on this issue.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Shields?
I'm just trying to keep up here. Dash 3, you said got to within 90% of the fiscal?
Yes.
And how big is the fiscal according
fiscal
to...
Fiscal is about $80,000 a year, Senator Shields.
And this gets to within 90%?
Yeah, it got us to $65,000 a year is what we figured.
Enough.
If it wasn't 100%, it wasn't enough.
I have the figures in front of me, and I looked at them earlier. The department estimates that personnel services and supplies expenditures will total 120 during the 05-07 and 160 during 07-09. I had just underlined those in my own packet here, and so I don't understand, number one, the discrepancy, but number two, I'm wondering... go ahead.
Senator Shields, the understanding... How they described that to us was that there's only 18 months in the first biennium where they're going to hire a full-time, an FTE. They wouldn't get that person hired until January. So in the first biennium, it would only be 18 months. In the second biennium, it would be the full 24 months. And so that was why it was 120 versus 160.
But I thought I heard you use a different number a few minutes ago.
$80,000
per year.
Yes.
So
calendar
60,
year.
You get 65 per year, and it costs 80 per year.
Yes.
And that isn't close enough.
Apparently not.
$15,000 difference per year. That's. I have a reaction to that, but I'll keep my mouth shut for now.
Okay. So at this point, Senator Ringo, we are again asking for a do pass recommendation on this bill with the dash 4 and the dash 5 amendments. There was some concern again with the current sturgeon propagators that the bill as written would weaken some of their existing rights under the statute. We didn't want to do that at all. We want to see them continue to be successful. We want to buy fish from them. Okay. Thank you. Anything to add?
Just that the current propagation line, sturgeon propagation, are adding to the economy of Oregon by stocking some fish into the Columbia River. And they are being managed already. There are three of them being managed already. So we feel that some of the resources that are already in use should be applied to the fiscal.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Joe Rollator, with the Oregon Aquaculture Association. As we were preparing for this meeting, I had a telephone conversation with Brendan McCarthy at Legislative Council. I explained to him that it was really our intent to not
in any way infringe on the grandfathering rights of Mr. Pelfrey and the other sturgeon operators. They have the experience, they have the expertise, they have the equipment, they have a huge investment in infrastructure. We want to grow sturgeon. We do not want to capture fish and propagate eggs. Brendan and I had I'm not a lawyer, so you probably understand this discussion more than me, but if you just go back and put back in the Section 330, then you're relying on grandfathering based on some unnamed permit previously. So that's why Brendan wrote the permit, the Amendment 5 the way it was. But he told me that if you all think that that's not very clear, that Mr. Pelfrey and the other two existing sturgeon permit holders were grandfathered in, that I should come back with the senator's permission and talk to you again. But I want to make it really clear.
I understand that the intention of the Dash 5 amendments are to grandfather the three current holders of sturgeon permits.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. With, under the current conditions.
Under the current conditions.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And just for a little background, the reason that we picked the percentage that we picked on our fee is that's the same percentage. Actually, there's a typo in there. It should be 3.25% of the value when sold the first time of the fish that commercial fishermen sell. When they sell a salmon, they pay 3.25%. We thought that was probably a pretty reasonable assumption. And our production...
But you don't want us moving that amendment anyway.
Not today.
No, but that's why we put that number on the table. And
okay. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
No, that's fine. Let's hear from the department on this. Well, look who showed up. But first, let's hear from the department. Roy Ellicker, John Thorpe.
What? You want questions, Brandon?
No. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Roy Ellicker for the Department of Fish and Wildlife, but John Thorpe, our program manager for fishery propagation. Having just received several of these amendments, I wanted to be, I'll probably need, I'm not quite sure what they all do. Amendment 2 is ours, and we are looking for that, as the panel previously discussed, to remove Section 2 of Senate Bill 351. And we have met with some of the folks there that work with Joe, and I've already offered on at least one of them to already issue an annual permit for the transport that they described to us. So under our rules, I've stated before, we can take care of the transport issues that have been described to us in our numerous meetings with the aquaculture industry. So that's why we asked for Amendment 2 to be removed. Senator, again, I also wanted to go on the record and say that the department does not have any opposition to getting the commercial sturgeon aquaculture, but it's the key issue here is that we be provided monies to work with and get a person on board that can work directly with the aquaculture industry. I have actually, if the community would like to see it, I did bring kind of what we thought would be the duties of somebody that would be hired as a natural resource specialist 3 that would be dedicated just to aquaculture, whether it's the advisory committee, whether it's the permitting issues, whether it's sturgeon, whether it's trout. I think industry has grown enough now, sir, that at this point, with existing resources, it's difficult for the department to meet all their needs. And frankly, if and we have had good talks with the industry, if we could reach some agreement on the fiscal, I think then we could really get started and have a person on board to work just specifically with them on numerous issues that they would like to see addressed.
Thank you. The fiscal you're referring to is to the Hatchery Advisory Committee, correct, in managing that committee, correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we had provided a revised fiscal that I'm assuming that you have at this point, and specifically, let me grab that out here.
It's dated March 24th. Is that the date of the revised fiscal?
That sounds about right. And if you look to page 2, we're in the back of that.
but really speaks to the paragraph, ODFW estimates that a full-time natural resource specialist be needed to do the committee meetings, but also on a number of other issues. And let me give to the committee.
Okay, just hang on a minute. So that employee would help with the advisory committee and then also coordinate sturgeon propagation activities, monitor
yes.
private hatcheries.
Yes.
Now, the point you raised is apparently you're already carrying out these activities for the three sturgeon hatcheries in operation.
Mr. Chair, the sturgeon hatcheries that are currently in place right now were grandfathered in back when the legislature originally decided to forbid commercial sturgeon aquaculture. So, and I'll let John perhaps talk to more of the nature of these sturgeon hatcheries, but essentially they take some brood fish from the Columbia River, particularly the one, Mr. Pelfrey, as we've discussed. He's really the most active one by far, and he sells sturgeon kind of as aquarium fish. It is not a commercial aquaculture operation, as we've talked about, that's being put together in Idaho and in California, anything like that.
Go ahead, Mr. Thorpe.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm John Thorpe. I'm the Fish Propagation Program Manager. The grandfathered sturgeon culture operations in Oregon have been in place alone since 1988 and have had what really is a minimal influence in aquaculture within Oregon. The bulk of the commercial sturgeon operations lie in California and Idaho and deal in caviar production and food fish production at a much larger level. The one in Oregon has been much lower key, and they rear some sturgeon and return some small sturgeon for us to put back in the Willamette River annually as part of a cooperative operation. And we have a feeling that if this project goes beyond the scope that it's at right now, we need to evaluate the existing sturgeon management rules and the aquaculture rules that apply to sturgeon broodstock collection as well as rearing the fish. And so there's a lot of work that we need to clean up if this goes beyond the scope of a single hatchery.
Well, I have a question. I mean, maybe you think that's a good idea, but this bill doesn't require you to do that.
Correct. Go ahead.
Well, I understand the argument that maybe you ought to do that to manage the sturgeon, and maybe our state needs to do that. I just, to me, it's you're coming up with the idea that, well, it'll be a good idea for you to do that, but that's not set forth in this bill.
No, sir, other than the bill does state that, I thought it stated someplace that the commission will make decisions, I can't put it down right now.
The advisory committee?
Not so much the advisory committee,
the commission.
But the commission, again, being strongly supportive of both the large recreational and commercial fish harvest on wild sturgeon. I mean, that's the kind of staff work that the department's going to have to be prepared to do to have the commission push forward an issue. I mean, I guess my point to the aquaculture industry, it does no good to pass a bill and telling the commission at all to think about commercial aquaculture. Unless the commission is going to feel comfortable in moving ahead, and that's what is going to take some staff time, in view of the fact that we're like one of the last large wild sturgeon harvest situations in the world, and the commission has been very, very focused on those issues.
Okay, thank you, Senator Byron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, appreciate all that you just said, but under current law, if we don't pass a bill, you still have to manage the responsibilities of coordinating sturgeon propagation activities and monitoring private hatcheries and transporting large sturgeon, don't you?
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, we still have to do that, and it's essentially that one hatchery we're doing that for right now, a very small scale.
Mr. Chair, if someone was to apply, let's say a whole bunch of people would apply to do more hatcheries on sturgeon with or without this bill for scientific or educational purposes, wouldn't you have to do all that before you could issue a permit or deny a permit?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we would have to do some evaluation, but frankly, since it's limited to cultural and scientific purposes, the commission could rule that, in effect, that the existing Pelfrey hatchery is providing all the cultural and scientific workers needed in the state. So in other words, it would call for a good deal of staff work on a very short notice, but in the end, the commission always had the option to not go any further, feeling like we haven't had enough time to prepare or enough work to prepare. So decision is solely up to the commission, and whether or not the staff at this point could prepare, say, a lot of folks might apply at the same time, and a lot of folks may be denied. And I don't think that's the purpose of why we're here talking about this center. I mean, my sense is commercial aquaculture, especially in the other states, is here. We want to look at it in Oregon. And so from the department standpoint, what we want to do in this way is get the yes. How do we get into commercial aquaculture in those kinds of situations? On sturgeon, as you can see, by leaving it as cultural and scientific, the commission really would have no emphasis to do anything, but it might be just to deny those.
Mr. Chair, I agree that we want to get to yes, and I'm talking about the last three amendments now, which get us 90% to yes. But in reality, you're already supposed to be doing more than that other 10%, aren't you, by law?
Mr. Chair, Senator Byrd, it's difficult for me to answer that. I'm not sure all that I'm supposed to be doing right now, except I know I can't, in the exception of cultural scientific hatcheries, right now we don't have any other sturgeon aquaculture facilities except essentially the Pelfrey operation. And
aren't there two others?
There are two others, but they're very minor, as I understand. Pelfrey is the really one that's during any work whatsoever. That's my sense. I may let John talk to that. I'm not that personally familiar with the other two operations.
Mr. Chair, I know another issue on this, and you know, I hope you appreciate it. I've been trying to get to yes on this issue now for almost 6 months, and it's been frustrating. But you know, and one of the issues is using sportsman's dollars for non-sportsman activities. Isn't that correct?
Yeah. Senator Ringo, Senator Barr, yes, sir, that's correct.
Talk to me about shellfish for a moment. How much does it cost the Department of Agriculture to administer the shellfish program for the sport fishing industry?
Senator Ringo, Senator Barr, sir, I don't have those figures in front of me.
$200,000 by the fiscal last session. How much did we give them, the Department of Agriculture, for the regulation of the shellfish industry from the shellfish licensing? $300,000 by fiscal last session. The other $100,000 was for the regulation of the commercial oyster industry. Those are sportsman dollars going to non-sport fishing purposes. Why is it okay to do it there?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I believe in the shellfish license particularly, there was a lot of negotiation back and forth about the various terms of the license and where the money would be used. That's the only explanation I can give.
But constitutionally, and don't you have the same problems there if you're using sportsman licensing for funding non-sportsman issues?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I just can't answer that off the top of my head.
Well, you see, Roy, the frustration I have is why we can't get to yes when the industry is offered up 90%. Yet I know that there's an example where it's way off of 90%. Why can't we get to yes?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I guess it's feeling inside the department, let me restate that. One of the issues we have of the amendment that the aquaculture industry would like to use for funding is that, sir, from a department standpoint, we don't have much way of knowing whether those are accurate estimates or not. You know, you heard Mr. Bent testify that it's 90% of the cost. That's 90% of the cost based on their estimates of what they produce. We don't have any independent, I don't believe, or solid production figures that supports 90%. Now, whether it's 80% or 65 or 90, I can't say, Senator, but I think that's been an issue for us. First of all, that the numbers they're showing that the tax would produce, I'm not sure we can really verify that. So that's been an issue for us. And I guess second of all, Senator, we've been working very closely with the aquaculture industry, and we've been doing our best to help them as they start to grow. But at this point, for us to really work more closely with them, particularly to get going on commercial aquaculture for sturgeon and some of the other issues they are bringing up would like more time and attention for, it's very difficult for us to find the resources in a timely way to do all the things that need to get done to help the industry.
Mr. Chair, I can appreciate what the department is saying, but you know, I think you guys know my feeling. I think this is a good bill. I think you need to move, I'd like to move this bill. I recognize it should go to Ways and Means. I'd like to, at this point in time, adopt the Dash 4 and Dash 5 amendments and move the bill to Ways and Means and let them, I guess, see if they can fund it. I think it's disappointing when an industry offers up, and they got those numbers from the harvest or the transport permits they have, the department issues them. That's where the numbers came from on what, how much money this is going to generate. So it seems like those are pretty verifiable numbers. If these are the permits the department has issued them for what they transport and what they sell. But, you know, I don't want to put a Dash 3 amendment in the bill that's going to fund something that we don't know if we're going to get to. So I guess I would like to move the Dash 4s, move the Dash 5s, move the bill Ways and Means, and maybe the money people can figure it out. I don't seem to be able to.
Okay.
Mr.
Senator Chairman,
as I followed, and I'm sorry I was out, but I got in before Senator Beyer got very far into his questioning. I really appreciate his logical line of questioning of the department, and I would concur that moving 4 and 5 would be the way to go.
Okay. Just a question. I think I already asked this, but I just want to be clear. Your fiscal is based on hiring somebody to help manage the sturgeon program in a way that you think ought to be managed, but not necessarily in a way that the law would currently require or that this bill would currently require. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I understand your question right, I understand your point, is that the fiscal is based on what the department believes is necessary to work with the advisory committee to start pioneering into commercial sturgeon aquaculture in the state of Oregon and transport issues and other aquaculture issues. It would allow the department to work much more closely with the young industry to help support the industry in finding solutions to problems which at this point, at times, it's very frustrating for the industry to figure out what kind of help they need and where they're going to get it. There's also fish health issues with hatcheries currently that we still have not solved. Again, that's another issue we'd like to take on with this person. And again, I have something prepared to talk about a number of issues that, okay, that the fiscal is based on. But based on just your reading of the law, Senator, you're correct. I mean, this is what the department would undertake if it passed. I can. That's where we're at.
No, I appreciate that. Okay, well, I guess I want to check with my leadership and guidance on moving bills with fiscals like this that may or may not be hard fiscals. So, let's talk about the amendments. If we move the bill, we need to adopt the Dash 4 and the Dash 5s. Is that right? 4s and 5s. Okay. Well, we have several other people signed up to testify, and I guess we're near the end of the... But I'd like to give them a shot. So let's go. Thank you very much, by the way. Do you have more?
No, Senator Shields.
Okay, I'm sorry. Linnea Woods, Henry Pelfrey. Are you the folks we're talking about?
We're the ones.
Okay. Sorry to keep you waiting, but, and if you could keep it brief, that'd be great.
That'd be fine.
My name is Lena Woods. This is my husband, Henry Pelfrey. We have Pelfrey Sturgeon Hatchery. And I guess to keep it short, you're familiar with the difference between wild broodstock sturgeon and domestic sturgeon. And the only reason I bring this up is I want it real clear in the legislative intent that the permits that we're talking about being grandfathered in, and I heard both ODFW say that they were grandfathered in, the industry say that they were grandfathered in, that we are clear that our permit is for taking sturgeon out of the wild. I don't want a situation where we come back later and someone says, oh, well, that really wasn't the intent of the bill. We're talking about only domestic propagation. Because the worst thing that could happen with this bill, with the ability to grow sturgeon out, which is a very good thing. We're not opposed to growing sturgeon out. We're not opposed to people cultivating caviar. Those are things that would be very good for the industry. But what we don't want to have happen is for us to be shut down on our operation and they have no source to even get their fry to grow out. So we want to be very clear on that. As to the language in Senate Bill 351-5 amendment, I think that that language should be tweaked a little bit, and maybe it has been. I'm not sure what version we're looking at. But the version that I have on the third line, it says, until the permit is renewed. And my concern with that is the permits are basically renewed. We pay our fee every December. And I don't want December someone saying, oh, well, that only applies until it's renewed.
I'm not following where you are.
The Dash 5 Amendment.
Sorry.
Dash 5 Amendment, I'm sorry.
Okay. That's okay.
That would be the fourth line down in Section 5.
Okay.
And what it says is a person holding a permit under ORS 497.325 may, until the permit is renewed, continue to operate a fish hatchery or remove the eggs, etc. I'd like to have that portion deleted, and then at the end of it, at the end of the paragraph, just add that such permits shall be renewed with the same conditions of the permit that were in effect on the date of the 2005 Act.
I'm thinking we ought to hear from Legislative Council. If you want to come on up here, Brendan, that'd be great. But Senator Beyer?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I mean, I think that's the intent of this, but my question would be, is there anything in the current law now that that requires the department to always renew your permit in the same condition it was when you were grandfathered?
I don't know that there's anything in there that would require them to, but on the other hand, there's nothing that would prohibit them from continuing on. I mean, there are Oregon administrative rules that have been promulgated under the statute so that there's criteria set out for the permit. I don't think they would be free to craft a new permit with different conditions.
Well, Mr. Chair, my concern would be that the way you described it, that would require them to always continue your permit as it is today, and that would not allow them to modify it, which I don't know if that's the intent of you that you have, because I don't
think...
I guess
that wouldn't be my intent. My intent would just simply be that we don't have a situation where a year from now ODFW takes the position that because this has been opened up to everyone, we're not issuing any licenses for anybody to take anything out of the Columbia River.
Okay, let's let the guy who drafted this speak to that. Brennan, are we in any danger of that interpretation?
Mr. Chair,
just for the record, you're...
Brendan McCarthy with Legislative Council. Sorry about that, Mr. Chair. Part of this all stems from the fact that I wanted to repeal 497.330, and I think that's the language in 497.330 is a little odd, but sub 3 of that section says existing permits may be continued under existing conditions, and that was put in place at the same time that the permit requirement in 497.325 was put into place. It's a little bit curious to me. Most of that section seems to me to be temporary in nature and probably should never have been codified, and that was the purpose of my repealing it. Sub 1 and Sub 2 certainly have no longer have any effect, and Sub 3 just says existing permits may be continued under existing conditions. Well, the problem with that sentence, in my opinion, is I'm not exactly sure what permits exactly they're talking about. And the other portions of that statute, they specify. Sub 1 says any new permit required under 497.325. Well, that's clear. Sub 2 says permits for sturgeon hatchery operation or sturgeon egg propagation. Well, that's clear. And Sub 3 says existing permits may be continued. Well, I'm not sure what that means. Existing permits relating to what? I mean, we can assume it means what's been talked about before, but without a more clarification, I'm not so sure. So that's where we started talking about this, and then I think the concern, a legitimate concern, arises and says, well, you know, what about these permits? What, you know, what can go on?
Okay.
I think that on a yearly, if these permits are being renewed on a yearly basis, the department probably has the authority to put the conditions on permits on a yearly basis. And I think Senator Beyer's comment is on the mark.
Okay, Senator Beyer.
Well, Mr. Chair, that brings up two questions, I guess. First, Brandon, when this bill came to you at my request to be drafted, it was your thought then to remove 497-330. That wasn't a request of my office or anyone that came down with a note from my office. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, that is my recollection at this point, that dealing with this area and this section, that was a cleanup on my part, and my recollection, yes, I could be.
Well, I wanted that on the record just so these people can be assured that there was no intent.
There was no intent, Senator.
To change any way in shape or form your permit. It was that this was something that Brandon thought would be appropriate to clean up this time. I guess rather than this amendment, then would it be appropriate to make sure that was the case to delete the section of the bill that says it deletes 497-330? Because it says in that statute that no permits could be issued prior or until after January 1st of 1992. We're clearly past that date, so that doesn't have any matter. And any permits that were issued prior to 89 or no activity are canceled. That's passed too. So if we got rid of the section of the bill that repeals 497-330, we would alleviate your concerns, it seems like.
So you're suggesting we have further amendments on this?
Well, I hate to say that because that probably keeps the bill here, but I mean,
that's okay.
The issue, I think, is that these people are concerned that there's an intent by this bill to somehow change it from.
I don't think there is necessarily an intent. I think that it might be construed as the intent later on as additional permits are submitted, because our situation is somewhat different than most people coming in. I mean, when you have 15 years experience doing something this unique, it is fairly different than if you're going to do it for the first time.
Okay, well, I guess, Senator Beyer, I'm willing to take my direction from you. Do you want us to hold off on this until we draft something that clarifies this, or do you want to... I'm willing to adopt the dash 4s and dash 5s and hold until I get more direction from the Senate President's office about the fiscal and the various... So you decide.
Well, Mr. Chair, at this point in time, I think rather than adopt the dash... If we're not going to move the bill today...
We won't move it today.
Let's not do okay. either, because I think maybe a cleaner section would be to delete section okay. 4 of the bill.
I will
that eliminates their concerns.
I will let Senator Beyer work with Legislative Council on this, taking your concerns in mind. So thank you very much. Thank you, Brennan. Appreciate
Could
that.
Could I say one thing?
Yes.
I wanted to be sure it's a win-win situation for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've worked with the State of Oregon Fish and Wildlife Department and done very well. We've restocked the Willamette River with sturgeon from the Willamette Falls up to Springfield, and it's a very, I mean, we worked with Steve King very closely with doing this, and it's worked very good. It's a win-win situation for Oregon and for us. And I'd like to have it also for the trout farmers, because they could raise trout and sturgeon as a byproduct, because the Chinese have been raising top feeders and bottom feeders for centuries and over 1,000 years doing that. And I think if Oregon could do that, because Idaho and California are raising sturgeon there too for a food fish.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
If I could add just one thing and then I'll leave.
You added one thing.
Just one more
Go
thing.
Go ahead.
The Russians have even been in to look at our facility because of their problems that they're having with their species being depleted. It's not exactly like this is a situation where we are doing something. I guess what I want to say is what we are doing is really good for the environment, and I think that should be taken into consideration.
And there's only 5 sturgeon hatcheries in the United States.
And yours is one of the 5. Okay. Thank you very much. Roger Martin.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, very quickly, I know you're in a hurry, and I just want to, I represent the Umatilla Indian Reservation. The tribe is very interested in the possibility of joining with some of the people that have testified.
Okay.
In joint venture, we bring 2 things to the table. We've worked long with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We realize their concerns, and we can work with them because we've done that on restoring the Umatilla River. And the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission has, through grants from the federal government from Bonneville, done a lot of research in this area. So we're supportive of where you're going on it. Thank you very much, and I'll shut up.
Okay. Thank you very much. Phil Donovan. Very brief, Roger. That was
He's neutral, though. This is going to be more confusing.
I'll try and emulate the previous speaker. Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Phil Donovan. I'm here on behalf of the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association. Just two thoughts. While this legislation is about ostensibly the food industry, the main concern the recreational anglers have is that we ought not pay for activities that don't benefit them. And I know you've had that conversation, but I just wanted to reiterate that the policy direction behind the Dash 3 amendments makes sense. Getting the dollars and cents of it hammered out in ways and means does too. So just wanted to share that. And then also, when this legislation gets discussed and the idea of sturgeon farms, the concern that always comes up is, are they going to be taking wild brood stock? And I've had conversations with the department and had understood that there existed the pelfrey operation. But I think that the Dash 5s do demand some more scrutiny, and so appreciate holding off on moving the legislation until that gets done correctly. So with that, I'll close. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, we're going to keep working on how to get to yes. Anything else from the committee? Okay, let's go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 351. We have Senate Bill 126 on the record. You're still working on amendments on that, my understanding is. I got a nod for a yes. Yeah, okay. And so we'll go ahead and adjourn.